on.
Why do you always drag us with you when you go on these stupid trips?
First of all, both of you are not here. Ragemaster bailed. Second, you gotta trust me on this one. There's a veritable treasure trove of worthwhile stuff around here.
In a desert. All I see is a Y.
That's it. That's the place we're looking for.
We're here. Now what?
If we can just find it or him.
Him who?
Yogurt!
Hi to me.
Yeah, you were in the movie.
Well, hello, boys. How can I help you?
We're here for the merchandising.
Merchandising?
Oy, that. Yeah, I'm sorry, boys, but you're not going to make any money with that anymore.
Why not?
You see, the boys upstairs sold the rights, and they put this new person in charge of the franchise. It's not so good.
Yeah, that's an understatement. We saw it.
What about the old stuff?
I'm sorry, boys. They killed the whole brand. No one wants any of it anymore. I had to sell the little Dink Dink guys.
Not the Dink Dinks.
I know. I could kvetch about it, but I got a new idea. I was thinking of getting into that Tiger fella.
Tiger King?
Yeah, that's the one.
Are you serious?
Oh, sure. Make some figures, some stuffed tiger animals. The kids will love it.
Nothing for us, then.
I'm sorry, fellas.
Well, thanks anyway, I guess.
You're welcome. See ya, boys.
Aren't you gonna say, may the Schwartz be with you?
Oi, no way. They charge me every time I say it.
Well, just watch out for Carol bleepin' Baskin. Sci-Fi Malady, Symptom 147, Spaceballs, The Review.
Back to the end, dear sickies. We are at the end of Sci-Fi Comedy Month, and we are on schedule. I'm so happy about that.
On schedule, and all it took was a lockdown, quarantine, pandemic to get us back on schedule.
Can we try to do it without this next month?
I was about to say, can we try that without? I prefer without. At any rate, we're reviewing for our final episode, Spaceballs the Movie. This is Spaceballs the Review. The search for no money. Yeah. Scott, I get the feeling that this was your first time watching it.
It was my first time watching it from start to finish in one sitting. I have seen multiple parts of the movie, probably the whole movie in different phases, but never all of it at once.
Okay. Because the way you texted me that this was a good parody, and I thought, wait, you never saw it? Are you kidding me?
I've never sat down and watched this thing all the way through from start to finish. No.
Oh, illegally. Thomas, I trust you've seen it before?
Countless times.
Countless times. Exact. So me too. It's got everything, sickies. It's, first of all, if you're unfamiliar, it's Mel Brooks. And if you don't know who Mel Brooks is, I don't care how old you are. Go up to a wall and tap it with your forehead. I would recommend lightly, but I leave that up to you. And then go watch Mel Brooks. You start with Young Frankenstein. You can even go on YouTube and watch some sketches of the 2000-year-old man with Carl Reiner and work your way up. Watch History of the World Part 1. And also you could watch Silent Movie if you want. Blazing Saddles.
Classic.
And Spaceballs. And Robin Hood Men in Tights. And while you're watching all these movies, if you're oversensitive, bear in mind, Mel Brooks is Jewish. So many of his Jewish quips land deliciously and are permissible. And just shut off all your preconceived notions. Just enjoy, especially when you watch Blazing Saddles. Just whatever sensitivities you have, just shut them off or don't watch.
Yeah, if you're under 30, I'd say don't watch, because you're not going to get it, and you're just going to be offended. And no, just don't watch, especially Blazing Saddles. Dear God, Blazing Saddles especially.
But that movie's hilarious.
It's very good. But and this one also could rub a few people the wrong way,
I guess.
Not as bad as Blazing Saddles is going to.
No, Blazing Saddles, he went pretty hardcore on that.
That was all out.
Which was why it was so funny. But you gotta love History of the World, too. Like, when he's Moses, and he comes out, and, like, God is telling Moses, Moses, can you hear me? Yeah, yeah, deaf man could hear you. What was that? Nothing, nothing. Oh, Lord, what do you have for me? And then he came out with three tablets. Attention, Israel, I come bearing the 15, and he drops one of the tablets.
The 10.
10 commandments. So, and then when he's a waiter at the Last Supper, one, and Jesus is like, one of you will betray me. Judas, how do you want? You want some wine? And then he asks everyone at the Last Supper, okay, I'm sorry to interrupt. I just got to know, is this one check, or is everybody paying for themselves? So, yeah. But so getting back to Spaceballs. Scott, do you have any details, or should I just launch into a quick summary?
I'm going to go into maybe the one bit of trivia here that I, not trivia, but like information that just to me hits home and just explains George Lucas in a nutshell. Do you want to know what Lucas's only condition on letting Mel Brooks parody Star Wars was?
What's that?
That he would make no Spaceballs action figures, because your action figures are going to look like mine. It's all about the merchandising. It really was, to George, all about the toys and the action figures.
Well, you know what? They made fun of it in the movie, so... When did this come out, though?
88, I believe. 87. June 24th, 1987. Okay. Running time, 96 minutes on a $22 million budget, and it made $38 million at the box office. By today's standards, that's a flop.
So I got to ask, who was in this? It was a kind of a star-studded cast, sort of.
Mel Brooks, John Candy, Rick Moranis' Dark Helmet, Bill Pullman, Daphne Zuniga, Dick Van Patten, George Weiner as Colonel Sanders, and Joan Rivers.
Who was Lone Star?
Was Bill Pullman.
Yeah, he's kind of a famous one.
Yeah, he's done a lot of stuff. Isn't he in, is he the president in Independence Day?
Yep. Yes, he is.
There you go. You've seen most of these people in these movies. I can't place George Weiner, but I know I've seen him in other things too as Colonel Sanders, but not as Colonel Sanders, but.
Yeah. Well, and it also had the guy who did all the voices from Police Academy. That guy.
Yeah.
We don't need his name. We just need to know the guy from Police Academy that did all the noises.
Right. It's like awesome movie trailer guy who does that voice, and you know who he is, and you know.
Right.
You don't need to know who he is. You just know in a world.
It's trailer voice guy.
Yes.
Yeah. So the basic summary of this movie is you have Lone Star, who is the stand-in for a smushed together version of Luke Skywalker and Han Solo, and his not Wookiee sidekick Barf, whose full name is Bartholomew.
He's a Mog.
And he is a Mog, half man, half dog. He's his own best friend. And they're flying around the galaxy in a Winnebago. Really, a Winnebago.
That is hilarious.
And what happens is the evil empire of the galaxy, which are called the Spaceballs, run by Dark Helmet and a president.
President Scroob.
President Scroob.
Yep.
And the salute. Look at the salute, Sickies. Whenever he comes on screen, President Scroob, salute. And it's a rude gesture. but Google it or YouTube it. But anyway, so the Spaceballs their main planet is running out of oxygen for some reason. Don't need to know. So they go to the planet Druidia to steal the oxygen from it because there's a oxygen shield around it. How does that work? Doesn't matter. Just go with it.
You know why this was about squandering the atmosphere and an oxygen shield and a hole in the oxygen shield, right? This was the late 1980s. The hole in the ozone layer was going to kill us all.
But you know what, though? It's Mel Brooks, so he's not Mr. Social Commentary. I think he was just running with it for a gag.
Oh, yes. He was using the hole in the ozone layer as a gag with squandering your atmosphere.
Oh, yeah. So
in order to find the code for... Go on. Sorry.
Sorry. I was just saying, I mean, obviously, canned ale was a whole bit.
Perrier air.
Like bottled water, canned ale. I mean, this guy's a master making up the synth. It's like, oh, good.
And you get that in the first like 7 minutes and you know exactly what you're in for and that it's just going to be delicious.
So the princess of Druidia, the Druish princess, that's Druish with a D, D-R-U-I-S-H, is supposed to be getting married to Prince Valium. Yes, I said Valium. And he falls asleep all the time. And she's supposed to be getting married, but doesn't want to. So she runs away from the wedding with her droid, her C-3PO droid played by Joan Rivers. And the name of the droid is Dot Matrix.
In her Mercedes spaceship.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which the king paid cash for and got a very good deal from his cousin. And so they take off. And she's kidnapped by the Spaceballs so they could use her as a way to get the combination for the airlock to steal the air from the Druidians. And out of desperation, the King Roland, her father, hires
Lone Star
to rescue her. And the only reason he does it is because he offers 1 million space bucks, which Lone Star needs to get away from the gangster Pizza the Hutt, who's going to send takeout for him.
I love Pizza the Hutt.
In fact, when they show up, it's when there was a phone call and he's like, don't put the screen on. That way they can't see who we are. Oh, sorry. I turned it on. Pizza the Hutt. Well, if it isn't Lone Star and his sidekick Puke, it's Barf. Barf, Puke, whatever.
Pizza the Hutt was such a good idea.
And his Pizza the Hutt sidekick is eating him while he's talking.
At the end of the movie, he's delicious. Found dead in his own limo and he ate himself to death.
Yeah. But Lone Star, needing the money, rescues the Druish princess. But to do it, they have to jam the radar of Spaceball 1, which is this impossibly long spaceship. It takes like 5 minutes of the first 2 minutes of the movie are just the ship flying by.
And to jam the radar, it's literally jam.
Jam. He shoots a giant jar of jam at the radar, which is raspberry, and Dark Helmet's like, raspberry. No one will give me the raspberry except Lone Star, and then the camera knocks him over.
I love that they keep breaking the fourth wall in this movie.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Also, I mean, come on, and of course now we also have a obscenely large helmet on him.
Oh yeah. Well, I like too when he shows up, and they're like, you want to see it on radar where the princess is? Yes. I always like that. I'm not looking at radar. What is this? That's coffee, sir. You want the coffee? Of course. I always have coffee when I'm watching radar. Everybody knows that. Of course we do, sir. And they're all holding their nuts because anybody that pisses them off, he puts the ring on and shoots their nuts off with a laser. So
instead of choking them, eating nuts.
And then when they have to try to get the princess, the princess is in front of him, so Dark Helmet's like, all right, shoot a laser across her nose. So the guy starts shooting, and he's like, careful, you idiot. I said across her nose, not up it. And then the guy, like, opens his helmet, and he's cross-eyed going, sorry, sir, I'm doing my best. Who made that man a gunner? And then another officer with cross eyes, I did, sir. He's my cousin. Who is that a-hole, sir? I know that. What's his name? A-hole. That's his name. A-hole. Major A-hole. And his cousin, Gunner's first class, Philip A-hole. How many a-holes are in this ship? Yo! Everyone gets up. Yo! I knew it. I'm surrounded by a-holes. Oh. I just like that. What's that? Who? What's his name? A-hole, sir. I know that. What's his name?
Oh, I gotta love Mel Brooks, man.
It's just such simplistic sophomore humor, but it hits home so, so well.
Oh, yeah, it's so stupid.
I love when he breaks in and he's playing with the dolls. And he's like, I told you to knock. Did you see anything? No, I didn't see you playing with your dolls.
I love you, leave me alone. Except your helmet is so big. Of course it is. You love me because Druish princesses are attracted to money and power. So, anyway, Lone Star manages to rescue the girls and takes off with a hyperactive instead of hyperspeed. And so the ship decides to catch up to them by going ludicrous speed, which goes into plaid, apparently. And then they go past them, and when they try to stop, Darth Helmet flies into a control console. Seriously, watch the ludicrous speed scene, Sinkies. It's amazing. And then the ship, Lone Star, runs out of gas, crashes on a Tatooine-type planet, where they almost die of thirst.
Don't forget, and they also have to lug all the luggage around.
Oh, yeah, the princesses matched luggage.
The giant hairdryer.
A giant hairdryer. And they decide to ditch that. And while they're going to, after they pass out in the desert, these little Jawa guys, that their whole speech is dink, 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 dink. That's all they do. Dink, 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 dink. And they rescue them and take them to see Yogurt, who is Yoda. And Yogurt tells them, they're like, what are you doing here, Yogurt? I teach the Schwartz. And merchandising. Yeah, merchandising, where the real money from the movie is made. Spaceballs the breakfast cereal. Spaceballs the lunchbox. Spaceballs the coloring book. Spaceballs the bath towel. Spaceballs the flamethrower.
Children's toy. I like at the end, they're in the truck stop and it's Spaceballs the placemat.
Everything. When the president is in bed with those girls, it's Spaceballs the bed sheets. Spaceballs the toilet paper with Darth Helmet's face on it.
I love the fourth wall breaking too. Things like that.
Oh yeah. What was the other one? So I guess they did make action figures, because there's that scene with Dark Helmet playing with them.
True.
I guess
the way he's playing with them. Two of them. I'm going to kill you.
Oh, yes.
So,
the Schwartz are hilarious too.
Oh yeah, the Schwartz is through a ring.
I was gonna say. I'm sophomoric and immature, but I think I'm jumping the gun on this, but I think my favorite scene is when they get into their Schwartz fight and they both make the lightsaber appear like it's a giant dong. And like, I see your Schwartz is as big as mine.
It's mine.
Who can handle it better?
And then you fight. Yeah, well, so eventually Dark Helmet catches up to them somehow on a desert, and the desert planet is combing the desert looking for them. And by combing it, I mean literally combing it with giant combs. Meanwhile, the president of Spaceball, President Scroob, finds out and gets beamed into another room, but his head is beamed on backwards. Would you like to get beamed over, sir? I don't know. Is that safe? Oh, yeah. And then the one woman, Snotty, beamed me twice last night. It was wonderful. Why not? It works on Star Trek.
Don't forget, it's the next room.
This time I'm walking.
Over one room.
You got it. No more beaming. I'm just going. And then after he turns, he looks, his head's on backwards. He looks down. Why didn't anyone tell me my butt's so big? So, yeah. They comb the desert. They find yogurt. They trick the Princess Vespa to come out, kidnap her. Lone Star goes and saves her. But in order to, when he gets to the planet Druidia, President Scroob gets on the ship and he's running to the front of the ship. And he's like, sorry, I had to run. If I walked, the ship's too big. If I walked, the movie would be over. Oh, the way they find the desert planet, they go rent Spaceballs the movie and watch it.
Instant video cassette.
Yeah.
How did they watch the movie? We're still in the middle of making it.
Oh, it was awesome. Awesome when they really broke the fourth wall while watching the movie. It's like, which part is this? It's this part right now, sir. It's this part we're filming right now.
Or later in the Schwartz fight when Rick Moranis' Dark Helmet comes up and like kills the boom mic operator.
Yes.
Well, but going back to that VHS, that was good because when they pop it in, you see the FBI warning. He's like, this is boring. Fast forward. Prepare to fast forward. Fast forward. Fast forward. And then it shows like the scrawl and the ship. And then it shows Dark Helmet's embarrassing moment with ludicrous speed. And he's like, no, no, no. Go past this part. In fact, never play this again. All right, stop it now. And then they're exactly at that scene. What am I looking at? When does this happen in the movie? You're looking at now, sir. Everything that's happening now is happening now. Go back to then. We can't. Why not? We just missed it. When? Now. We're in now now. Go back to then. We can't. Why not? When will then be now? Soon. How soon?
Now.
After they find the desert planet, they watched the movie.
Should have kept watching.
Yeah,
right. So the ship then winds up turning in, Spaceball One turns into a gigantic robotic maid.
Mega maid.
Mega maid. And they have to go inside to get her. Well, first of all, they do rescue her. Excuse me. They go to Spaceball Planet and rescue Princess Vespa. But then the Spaceballs accidentally capture the stunt doubles, not the heroes.
Oh, how about the fact when he gets the combination from the king?
Oh, yeah.
By threatening to give her back her original nose.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Well, he threatens, he says, I'll give her original nose. What's the combination? The combination is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
That's what an idiot has for his luggage.
That's the stupidest combination I've ever heard in my life. It's the kind the idiot has on his luggage. And then the president shows up. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I have the same combination on my luggage.
It's remarkably far-seeing and prescient, though, because how many people still have to be told that their password for their sensitive work logins can't be password or password one? Like, we literally have to come up now with special characters because people were so stupid to just keep naming things password.
Yeah. What's your password? Password.
It's password with dollar signs.
It was clever the first time.
Yeah.
So they wind up, they rescue the princess and go back to Druidia, where it turns into a giant maid, Spaceball One does. Except they say, okay, prepare for metamorphosis. Ready, Kafka? Which, if you're a literary buff, Kafka wrote. Metamorphosis, the Roach story. But anyway, so they decide to go into the ship and try to deactivate or set off the self-destruct button, because they always want. And they get in, and Lone Star tries to do the Vulcan neck pinch on the guy, and the guy's like, what are you doing? The Vulcan neck pinch? Nah, stupid, you got it way too high. You got to put it down where the shoulder meets the neck. Like this? Yeah.
I was trying to catch all of the sci-fi references. There's one that I think might have been snuck in that people didn't get. You got Star Wars, obviously, Star Trek, Alien, Planet of the Apes, Wizard of Oz. I'm missing one here, but I'm pretty sure I caught a Jupiter 2 reference in there somewhere too.
Ah, he did say that.
Yep.
Because when Lone Star said, where were they last? He was like, they were last seen passing Jupiter, too.
Yep. So you got a Lost in Space reference thrown in there, too.
Yep.
So Lone Star gets in, and he gets into where the self-destruct button is, and there's a note on it that says, do not push under any circumstance unless you really mean it.
And then it says, no authorized or unauthorized personnel in here.
And then Dark Helmet shows up, and he's like, before we fight, there is something you must know. I am your father's brother's nephew's former roommate. What does that make us? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. And so they get into their lightsaber fight, which breaks the fourth wall because Dark Helmet accidentally kills a boom mic operator and blames it on Lone Star. He did it. And then after that, they get their Schwartz twisted. I hate it when my Schwartz gets twisted. And then Dark Helmet tricks him by shaking his hand and taking the ring out and throwing it down a vent. And so he's trying. And then that's when Yogurt talks to Lone Star and says, forget, you don't need the ring. I found it in a Cracker Jack box. The Schwartz isn't you. So Lone Star gets a mirror and Dark Helmet tries to shoot a laser at him and it bounces off the mirror and into his balls and Dark Helmet hits the destruct button and they get out. The planet blows up, or the Spaceball One blows up. And then Lone Star finds out this necklace he had on him. He drops the princess off, leaves, and goes to that space station cafe where the crew from Alien is there. And the one guy, I forget his name from the movie, but an alien comes out of his stomach again, a chest burster.
And then it does the whole singing frog thing. Hello, my baby. Hello, my honey. Hello, my end-time gal.
And then they're like, so what did he have? He had the special. That's what I ordered.
I'm screwing this guy some help. He needs some Pepto-Bismol.
And then they open up a fortune cookie Yogurt gave him. Yogurt came out and said, hey, Lone Star, that necklace around your neck, it says you're a prince. If you hurry up now, you could go marry Princess Vespa, who he's fallen in love with. And he pours some liquid Schwartz into the gas tank, flies back in time to marry her. The end.
Yeah, you skipped over the scene that would have had this movie like not shown in any movie theater ever. And that's where Barf's tail is assaulting the waitress behind him. Oh, it's got a mind of its own, honey.
Yeah. Sorry, it's got a mind of its own.
Oh, yeah. Don't forget Barf's food.
Barf. Well, we might as well go through that now. First, what kind of references do we have here? So, Scott, obviously we have Star Wars. Duh.
Yep.
We have Star Wars.
You've got the Wizard of Oz. You've got you got Star Trek. That's obvious. We talked about Alien. You've got Planet of the Apes. Someone has said
Oh, my gosh. Yes, I forgot. Yep. After Spaceball One blows, just that whole sequence where the president's in there and they can't get to escape pods.
He jumps in with the circus bear.
Yeah. And when the play starts, when they announce the self-destruct, they're like, cancel the three ring circus. Get the animals out of the zoo. And then the bearded lady shows up and Dark's like, that's fine. Who are you? I'm the bearded lady. Who are you? One of the freaks. And then at the very end, that's the president, Colonel Sanders, and Dark Helmet. And they're like, What do we do? And the computer's like, this is your last chance to push the cancellation button. Cancellation button, hurry! It's over here. Out of order.
And then it's like 8.
Nothing works.
6. What happened to 7?
Yeah, they count down 10, 9, yeah. 6. 6! What happened to 7? Just kidding. And then when it got to 0, have a nice day. Thank you. And then it blows up and they land on the Planet of the Apes. And the Planet of the Apes on the beach, see, and it looks like from Planet of the Apes with the Statue of Liberty. And the Planet of the Apes see them and go, what are those coming out of her nose? Space balls. Ah, crap. There goes the planet.
I'm reading that there's a 2001 A Space Odyssey reference in there. I must have missed it, but
does it say where? Because so did I.
No, it, Wiki says it channels 2001, but I didn't see it. So
okay,
there's so many in you. It's like could have easily missed one.
Coming up, Bongo's review of Rocky 5000.
Now, they weren't so far off. You know, you got through Rocky 5, then you had to undo the horrible ending of Rocky 5 where you leave him brain damaged and broke broke. That's the way you end Rocky 5. Nope, we better undo that one. We get to Rocky 6 where Adrian has died of cancer and he wants to go have one more fight at 60, turn his brain into a mashed potato. And then we'll just get him on into Creed 1 and 2 and whatever else. But yeah.
Hey, I liked Creed. Those were good movies.
Yeah, they were. And I mean, I even liked parts of Rocky 5, but you know, I didn't think the idea of leaving him brain damaged and broke was the best way to end the film.
No, though I do want to see how Rocky 5000 ended.
Yeah.
Hey, it could have been worse. The whole Rocky Balboa series could have been about Mickey's granddaughter.
So yeah, and then of course they learn Pizza the Hut got trapped in his limo and ate himself to death.
Oh, Pizza the Hut is hilarious. Just that design and the melting cheese and all the pepper.
It was sick, but funny.
You know, we talk about this, and it's easy to dismiss Spaceballs as just being a very sophomoric piece of humor, the same way you would Super Troopers, okay? But it's a tough line to walk with having a bunch of stupid, slapstick, lowbrow, sophomoric humor and having it hold together for an hour and a half. Super Troopers did it very well. Super Troopers 2 didn't do it so well. Spaceballs did it phenomenally well. But it would be very easy to go over the top and have something just so bad and so sophomoric that you tune out 6 minutes in because you just can't stick it. It's more of an art than you realize, is what I would say.
I would agree with you because you can look at like parody and like Airplane. Airplane's good, but then you start hitting some of the other stuff. You know, for a scary movie, not bad, but by the time you get to Scary Movie 3 or whatever. You get to all this stuff and you start noticing they don't beat the Spartans or whatever. I mean, it's like these aren't funny. They aren't actually going for the actual comedy. They're just making a joke and leaving it.
And it's
the art form is to make the joke work in the story.
And you got to mix in, like, as much as you want to go with a whole bunch of things about Rick Moranis shooting people he doesn't like in the nuts with a laser ring and having laser sword duels where you make the lightsabers appear like they're someone's penis to fight, to literally dick fight for the girl. You got to balance that out with jokes that aren't that much to the bottom. You can't throw those in every 5 seconds or else you get a velocipaster. The difference between Spaceballs and Velocipaster is knowing when to pull back from that for a second and do something legitimate or at least something that is higher than a joke you heard in second grade.
Yeah. I mean, let's be honest, combing the desert with a giant comb.
Yeah.
That one is almost brilliant because it comes out of left field.
Well, and you know what else is neat about parody when done properly is that it can afford to be meta. There's a time and place to be meta. And I think the problem today, I'm going to rant about modern writers again, particularly Star Wars.
No, you?
And what's his name? Kurtzman.
Hold on a second. This session of Get Off My Lawn, Whippersnapper, is brought to you by Sci-Fi Melody.
That these guys, Mel Brooks, he is very meta. I mean, he makes fun of the merchandising thing constantly, but it's okay there because it's the right environment for it. when you start trying to do it in an actual, real, legitimate storyline, it takes away from that edge. So you're trying to tell the saga of Luke Skywalker. And let's just presume, for the sake of argument, that the last trash dumpster fire, I mean Jedi, sorry. Let's just presume that he wasn't a jerk. Whenever you decide to get meta, it tends to take away from the story. Or, you know, well, like the Disney's real good about this in their princess movies now. They want to be like, oh, we're making fun of the old princess trope in our new movie. It really takes away from your story, though, because why do I don't need to hear you criticize your own movie while you're making it. Just there's a time and a place. It works really good with
parody. When you're doing a low budget parody, it works very well.
That's perfect timing to do it.
Yes.
There it's perfect. But when you're doing it in an actual movie, you're not clever. You just suck. You think that meta critique is the same as good writing, and it's not.
Rage Master, do you have big weekend plans, like watching for the neighborhood kids to throw their ball in your yard and running out the front door and getting it and yelling, "It's mine now," and running back in the house?
Yes. Yeah.
He's also going to tell him to get off his lawn, you whippersnapper.
Yeah. Yeah. I just mowed it. Get off. But that's just the point. This whole, like, but not only that, though, this parody is a better story than things like The Last Jedi.
It has less holes in it.
Modern Star Wars, what's that?
It has less holes in it.
It does. That's a joke, but it's true.
It makes far more sense than a full-fledged rebellion spanning from the contents of the Millennium Falcon in a matter of 4 months.
Well, yeah. Better yet, it makes more sense than our strategy to escape is to go slower so that we're just out of range of a laser. What?
Yeah, you want to talk about, like, Star Wars is the action science fiction property. And I know it's not a science fiction movie, Rage Master, but everyone else says it is. It's action franchise. And you turn the big battle into, if we go slow enough below light speed, they can't get into our range because it's sublight. That big thing can't catch up to us.
Apparently, seriously? They can't go. Going 100 kilometers faster with unlimited fuel supply is impossible for them.
Right. Why don't you just go full Star Trek TOS and have it be a submarine battle in space where you try not to make a sound for the sound waves that don't travel through space to be heard?
You have that.
Thomas is about to die over here. That's the best part of this. He's watching Thomas crack up.
I am, because I'm like, you're absolutely right, where it's like, it's stupid. A, the TOS one was like, yeah, you're stupid, but you're right also on the stupidity here, but you're absolutely right. Parodies have their place.
Parodies should be stupid. Like the go slow thing, if that had been in the parody, I would have just rolled with it and laughed because that's its place. That would make sense there. But to make that your real story and then say, oh, we can find it because there's a hyperspace locator. You know what? You should have just gone with they watched their own movie while it was being made. That was a better story idea. That was better. Somehow that made more sense.
I also feel like Princess Leia should have been aware of the fact that you can put a tracking device on a ship and track it through space, since I don't know what happened to her.
Well, not only that, apparently
it's not like it's new technology.
they did in episode 4, but not anymore. But Rian Johns would know that because he's a super Star Wars fan.
Yeah, of course he is.
But that's the point, that when parody is doing better than your writing, it's time to fire the writers.
I got
to
steer us back here because we're turning into a bash the post-Quill Disney trilogies instead of talking about Spaceballs.
Scott, I tied it together in a neat little package.
You sure did. But now we've gone we've gone into just ripping on Star Wars at this point. So I think one of the things that makes this work, and I said this is a tough craft to pull off. Rick Moranis makes this whole thing work. Bill Pullman is great too. But this thing doesn't work without Rick Moranis to hold the whole thing together. Dark Helmet
is a brilliant.
Yeah. It's tough to play parody well and to strike that balance. And look, Rick Moranis, when he has to be serious, isn't so good. But Rick Moranis, when you can put him in a role like this, where you can just act like a bumbling idiot, it's second nature to him, like breathing. And he pulls it off well. And then John Candy on the other side. You've got Rick Moranis and John Candy, masters of their craft. And I mean, you couldn't come up with a better role for John Candy than a half man, half dog named Barf that's eating disgusting food and being inappropriate for the whole movie.
Yep. Oh, he played that role perfectly. Oh, it's brilliant. Oh, don't forget, what was it? Barf was looking up the skirt when they were going up the ladder.
Yeah.
Stop looking at my can.
Yeah.
Yep.
So what's my role? What is my inspiration here? And I don't remember when this movie came out, but John, your Uncle Buck in space.
But you're a part dog.
Well, he's a dog. He's a total dog.
He's a mog.
But I mean, when you put those two great comedic actors opposite of each other and you give them good material to work with, I mean, you get something that's great. If you don't have those two in that spot, I don't know if this comes out as well. I really don't.
No, I mean, you do need the. If they were to try to recreate this or make a sequel now, it would flop. Because you need the actors. You need the actors at that time. You need the writer. You need that combination, and it's just not there.
No, I mean, and if I had to come up with an alternate for Lord Helmet, a Dark Helmet instead of Rick Moranis, who would it be? I'm putting you on the spot this time, but I'll throw one out. I think maybe Christopher Lloyd could have pulled it off. He had just enough of the over-the-top hysterics to maybe pull something like that off.
Yeah, I don't know, because I'd be too busy looking. If he's doing that, I keep picturing him as Doc.
Yeah. The part of Lone Star went to Bill Pullman. Up until that point, James Brooks had been trying to get Tom Cruise and Tom Hanks for the film, and that would have been a disaster. And it
no.
Would have, no.
No.
Oh, no. Especially not Tom Cruise.
No.
Especially not Tom Cruise.
And but
let's be honest. This was pretty much the perfect cast when you watch the movie. You can't really see any of these roles played by anyone else.
Yeah.
What was the general or whatever, I mean, talking to Captain Helmet or whatever.
Oh, Colonel Sanders?
Colonel Sanders?
Yeah, sorry, thank you.
George Weiner.
There we go. I mean, he played that role perfectly.
Yep.
Yep.
Even the more minor actors, like Daphne Zuniga playing Princess Vespa, I mean, they all pulled this role. This was very well acted, and as much as there was great material given to these guys, I mean, Joan Rivers' Dot Matrix is fantastic. And mm-hmm. I mean, you gotta give so much credit of this to the cast that brought this to life and really added big parts of themselves to these characters.
Oh, absolutely.
And somehow they pull off the slapstick. Like when John Candy, the statue falls on his foot, and then they pull it back out, and it's real flat and big, like in a cartoon. It's like, this is funny. It's funny.
Oh, yeah. Do you know who the voice of Pizza the Hut was?
Who?
Dom DeLuise. And it was Rudy DeLuca as Vinny.
Was Dom in the suit?
Just the voice. Okay. He was not in the suit, I don't think. It says he was the voice of Pizza the Hut.
Okay.
He might have beaten the suit.
Wow.
And I think, you know, as we come back to a third thing that I think really pulled this thing together and made it work on good level, it was just serious enough in being an accurate portrayal of Star Wars that it pulls you into the believability of it. They got close enough to the characters they were parodying, whatever, edit, insert the word later. They got close enough to what they were mimicking to make you believe that it was passable. It's kind of like what Weird Al does. The skill of Weird Al is not his lyrics. Yes. It's what he can do with his voice to make you believe that, you know, he really is singing. He really is singing American Pie. And if Don McLean had wrote it, about Star Wars, that's how it would have came out. But it's even honest, to the Spaceballs main title theme. You can hear some of the similarities between that and the Star Wars theme.
Well, I mean, you can tell right away when it starts off and you're watching the ship fly over. Right then, it's doing it.
That's it.
It's close enough, but it's also playing fun off of it because it's like it's longer and it takes forever to fly over.
Similar, and there's similar places. Tatooine is in there, basically. You have the Death Star is basically Spaceball City. I'll get to that later, but there's the ship. Yeah, they got all the places right. It looks like a Star Wars movie.
Yeah. And again, you have to laugh at like the Falcon now is instead of, you know,
it's a Winnebago.
It's a Winnebago. It's like, well, it's supposed to be a flying piece of trash. There you go.
There you go. I think it'd be a good time now that we've praised this, the whole concept, our favorite highlights or some of the highlights we like. And I'm going to go with one where when the self-destruct starts or everything's breaking apart and the president looks at Sanders and goes, Sanders, you got to help me. You got to do something. I'm the president. Or you got to help me. You got to do something. I can't make decisions. I'm the president, for God's sakes.
That's a good one. Yes. Fortunately, somewhat accurate to today.
Yeah, but that's why it was nice. I mean, he made that statement. It's the nice Jewish tradition of poking fun at those and above you, punching up.
Yeah, I would say the canned ale, speaking canned air was hilarious for me.
Huffing canned air.
Yeah.
After telling everyone, there's not an air shortage. I've heard the same thing myself. Okay, thanks for calling. Bye.
Now, lots of really, really smart people have told me that there's not an air shortage. It's fake. We have great air. Lots of air. Beautiful air. We got a plan. We're going to have the best beautiful air in the world. It's going to get back with a bang. But I already kind of leaked my favorite part, and it's sophomoric, but it's the Schwartz penis fight at the end.
Oh, yeah, looking down, I can see your Schwartz is as big as mine. Now let's see how you handle it.
Oh, there were so many, let's be honest, at times immature jokes, but they hit and they work.
Yeah, but it's mixed in with the good humor jokes that you need to think about. The meta commentary, it's all rolled in, and it's all equal parts.
Right.
And that's not, what makes it so funny.
Right. It's not 100% slapstick. It's not 100% immature joke. It's not 100. It's this mix that keeps you moving in between. Right.
That's right. And that's what, I mean, that's Mel Brooks pretty much. He knows his business.
And he's very good at it. Yes.
Right.
Did you guys know they made a 12-episode animated Spaceballs series in 2007 to 2009?
Yes. I didn't watch it, but yes.
They actually brought back Daphne Zuniga to be Princess Vespa. Do the voice.
I heard about it, and I think I saw a trailer or something, but I never watched it.
Mel Brooks was in it, and Joan Rivers was still in there. They replaced the voice of Lone Star. They brought back some of the people. Dom DeLuise came back as Pizza the Hut.
But he was dead.
And Rudy DeLuca came back as Vinny.
Huh.
They got some pretty big names to come back and do this thing.
Nice. Well, that's...
Oh, my God. So here's the plot of the first television show. Dark Helmet, okay. After the pilot, episode one, Revenge of the Sithy. Dark Helmet gets knocked out by a robot stripper in Scroob's new casino and recalls his origin stories in a dream. Once he was a young boy named Panikin Crybaby, and he won his freedom in a Nazpod race and was trained in the Schwartz by Yogurt, but fell in love with Princess Harley Van Patten.
I guess maybe I should watch this after all.
Episode three, Lone Star and Princess Vespa are sucked into a game of Grand Theft Starship.
Okay, I'm
Lord of the Onion Rings. He stole the one onion ring from Scroob's father. And now, Barf finds it stuck in an old couch inside the Eagle Five.
Eagle Five being the Winnebago they drive. Now, wait, was this written by Mel Brooks?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, it's good.
Sorry. He wrote the pilot. Other people wrote the shows after it.
But still, it was endorsed. Yeah. So I'll go with it.
Well, definitely the pilot sounds hilarious.
Scroob is way behind in the re-election polls, so he and Dark Helmet go back in time to kill the great-great-grandmother of his opponent. I just forgot something though. You said favorite parts. The virgin alarm that Dot Matrix has.
Yeah.
And she's at the wedding at the end and she's like, my alarm's programmed to go off before you do. And then she's like, goodbye, virgin alarm.
Oh yeah, I forgot about the chastity belt.
Oh, that was Men in Tights.
Yeah.
Another great movie, by the way.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Episode 13, the final one. Barf gets bitten by a mutant space spider and becomes Spider-Mog.
I have to see this now. I want
Is it
Spider-Mog?
I wonder where it might. Do we know the format where it is?
I'm going to have to check. President Scroob fools Yogurt with a free body scan to steal his gallbladder, which is the source of all the Schwartz.
Gallbladder versus Schwartz. I love it. Oh, wow.
Well, is there anything we didn't like? Because I can't. This has got to be the shortest part of the show.
Original Network, Super Channel, and G4.
Okay.
And it doesn't say where it's at now.
Okay.
Is there anything that I didn't like? No.
Yep, that's about right.
Yeah, no.
There's literally nothing I can critique this for, either as a parody, as a comedy, in the acting, directing, the cinematography, the score, or the story. I mean, the story holds up better than any of the Disney verse Star Wars movies. And probably some of the prequels.
I hate to agree with that.
I mean, there is less plot hole. The plot makes more sense in this than any J.J. Abrams film.
Well, that's because it gets to the end.
In a logical order.
Yeah.
Yes. It just doesn't drop stuff and go, mystery box.
Thomas, was there anything you didn't like in this movie?
Nope.
Nope. Well, I think it's...
I found it, by the way, the animated. I only found it on Amazon Prime.
Sweet.
Okay.
On I Amazon figured Video. So
figured it would be there.
Unfortunately, not free.
That's okay.
Yeah, of course not. Well, I think
I'm willing to pay for this.
Well, Mark, okay. I'll buy it. And since you have my Amazon Prime account, after I buy it, you can watch it.
Yep. So I guess we could probably rate this thing. We'll rate it... How many dark helmets?
Oh.
10.
What'd you say?
10 dark helmets out of 10.
Yeah, I'm giving it 10. I mean, it's hilarious and it's got all the stuff we mentioned.
Yeah, you want to do a comedy parody? This is the gold standard.
Yeah.
Absolutely. 10 out of 10 for me also.
Well, that doesn't happen much.
No, it's happened like two or three times in the history of the show.
Wow.
I suspect it's going to be like that when we see Dune.
Maybe.
I don't know. I could be really, really critical on that.
Yeah.
Now, but the guy who made Blade Runner 2049 is doing Dune, remember?
And that was the first movie I gave a perfect 10.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
it's possible. It's possible. But this movie is one of the very few we've given a perfect score out of.
Dune. That's right. What was the other one? I think it was Apollo 13.
Yeah.
It might. Yeah. Apollo 13. I think. Yeah. So there's only been maybe two or three.
It's been a couple. Yeah. That's it.
I mean, we haven't ever reviewed it, but if we ever reviewed Wrath of Khan, that would certainly get an 11 from me out of 10. But, you know.
So would that be your favorite Star Trek movie ever?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Wrath of Khan is the gold standard for the Star Trek movies. Absolutely. And even including in the next, there's no Next Generation movie that comes close to being as good as Wrath of Khan.
Not even First Contact?
No, First Contact is good, but it's good because it found a way to mix some humor in with the Borg and some dark nature. But I wouldn't even say First Contact is my second favorite Star Trek movie of all time. You'd probably get to the Undiscovered Country would come in before that.
Oh, that was a good one, too.
Yeah.
That was a very good one. So, which Scott will have to review those now that you have time.
Yeah, I do.
You should get back on doing your movies, because let's see, you did four.
I didn't do four.
No, you didn't. You did five, Dear God, Why?
And one.
That's it?
That's it.
Yep.
No, you did three.
Did I do three?
You did three.
Doc Brown's Magical Time Machine?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
So now you need to do the evens, 2, 4, 6.
Yep. I have the title for four. I wrote half of it, but then I lost it because the computer crashed. It was Spock Takes a Walking Tour of San Francisco in a Bathrobe.
Yeah.
It's accurate.
Or if you want to do this one, Star Trek IV. The Search for More Whales. but then honestly, 2 and 6 are going to get a glowing review from you, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely. And 4 is good, but as we go through that, I've always brought it up as my example of a movie that we don't know why it's good. It has no villain. It has no plot. It's just held together by comedy and great character work. And it's my example of a movie that if you have great characters that people like and actors and actresses that know the characters and writers that know them, then you don't need a plot.
Absolutely.
That had a plot. It just didn't have a villain.
Okay.
Sure.
None of it makes sense because Whale Song travels through space. Why?
Yeah.
Why is the probe coming to talk to the whales?
Why is it going to destroy Earth to find the whales? Because wouldn't that destroy the whales?
Exactly. Why haven't you answered? Because you friggin' turned my planet into a wasteland. I can't answer at the moment. Well, what are you doing?
Yeah.
It'd be like if I came over to knock on your door. Mark, where are you? Where are you? All right, start swinging the crane through his house.
Set it on fire. We'll smoke him out.
Oh, hey, there you are, Mark. Good to see you. Aren't you glad I saved you from these jerks who are imprisoning you in your house? Hey, see you later. Good luck rebuilding that. Hope you had good insurance.
Oh, by the way, I need you to go get suited for the tux for my wedding. Is that going to be okay?
Right.
Now there's, and I presume without getting too much on the Star Trek rabbit hole, but in Star Trek 2, you're going to praise the soundtrack.
Oh yeah, you have to. Look, the soundtrack in all of the Star Trek movies has been nothing but phenomenal. It's not bad in any of them.
But part 2 is exceptionally good.
Yes. Absolutely.
Especially with the combat scenes.
There's nothing you can take away from that movie. I mean, I could go through and try like I did with episode 4 of Star Wars: A New Hope to go show you where the movie's bad just to do it in an mm-hmm. exercise, but it would be hard to really do. It really would. But But I think now we're just talking about the future direction of the show.
Yeah, now we're talking about your future reviews that you have to do.
It's a planning movie. Yeah, it's right up there with America Asunder Episode 3.
You're locked in. You're locked in now.
No, what I'm really going to do is write an episode zero for a Three Kingdoms podcast, and then an episode zero for another podcast, and then an episode zero for another podcast, and never come back to
them. And then never release them?
Exactly.
Don't worry. At this rate, he will finish the Civil War at the same rate that the Hundred Years' War got finished.
I'm in a race with George R. R. Martin for efficiency.
But it's never getting done.
Hey, man, that comet could just crash in and take us all out. But all right. So let's land this plane.
Next month, Sickies, we're going to be taking another step in the past. We're going to be doing Matinee May, where we're going to be looking at the sci-fi serials of the 30s and 40s, the kind you would have seen, maybe even the 50s, that you would have seen in one of the movie theaters.
So someone's reaching out to Don O'Malley from Don's Breakfast Cereal, right?
Yep, that's me. But I was about to say, you might remember, we're going to be doing, this is courtesy of someone you might have remembered from Goulardi Fest, Don O'Malley of Don's Breakfast Cereal, who is, by the way, on eBay selling an exclusive collector's issue, one-of-a-kind Sci-Fi Malady coaster. So it's out there. But we did an interview with him at Goulardi Fest. He's a great guy. I'm going to get in touch with him. Maybe we'll do another interview. I don't know. But we're going to be watching some of the stuff from him. So, and fortunately, it's all on YouTube for free because public domain.
All right.
So that'll be next month. And looking forward to that. So tune in next week. But in the meantime, if you want to contact us or give a suggestion, a shout out, a complaint, yeah, I guess we'll listen to a complaint. You can do that at
our website at ravinglunaticmedia.com. Leave it right there in the comments section. You can give us a 5-star review anywhere where you're listening to your podcasts, or you can hit us up at our unmonitored Twitter page at Sci-Fi Malady, our unused Instagram page at Sci-Fi Malady, or an email address that I haven't looked at in 5 years, contact@ravinglunaticmedia.com. But really, just go to the website, ravinglunaticmedia.com, ravinglunaticmedia.com, ravinglunaticmedia.com.
Right.
What's left for them to do, Rage Master?
Before we end this, I would like to say, when this is all over, when they start opening, wherever you live, Sickies, when this is all over and they start opening game shops and comic shops, go support them, go patronize them. Well, I don't mean the bad patronize. But go support them, like Brandon over at Gamers Haven, or if you're in the Cleveland area, the West Side Cleveland, or wherever you live, they're going to no doubt take a hit from this. We understand the necessity, but go in there, spend a few dollars, buy some books. If it's comics and you don't want to buy modern ones, buy the back issues, find some games, frequent those places, because these are the bastions of what we like, and it's getting harder for them to stay around.
Yeah.
They're in medias that are incidentally kind of dying thanks to home entertainment. And so let's try to see the end of that. Let's try to put that out. And so when they start opening back up, go frequent. That's what I'm going to ask you to do. And in the meantime, the other thing I'll ask you to do is stay sick, Sickies.